Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. Well, maybe a couple of questions. Why did it take a year for Donald Trump's archives to be handed over to the government? And if he destroyed so many of his records, did he do anything wrong legally? Let's get to the bottom line. Donald Trump's legacy was that he was unconventional and didn't care much for the traditional norms of the White House. But recently, his habit of ripping up papers and throwing them on the floor or in the trash has come under a lot of scrutiny. Lots of records that he reportedly was required by law to keep and advised by his lawyers to do so went into burn bags and were incinerated in the Pentagon. The law says any of Trump's memos, his letters, his papers, even emails, although there's no evidence that Trump actually used email much, are the property of the American people. They have to be preserved by the White House and sent on to the National Archives by law for safekeeping as historical records. This week, we learned that Trump's team just sent 15 boxes from his home in Florida last month, and many documents were torn into shreds, stuck together by tape. Today, we're talking about Trump's paper trail, or lack thereof, and what it means not only for historians, but for the lawmakers investigating the events of January 6, 2021. Today, we're talking with Josh Dossi, an investigative political reporter at The Washington Post, who's done some of the really major reporting on this story. And joining me here in the studio are Anne Weissman, who has literally fought against every American president since the 1980s to make sure that their records come back to the public. Anne is the former chief counsel for Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Responsibility? Ethics? Washington? We're going to have to talk about that. And Professor David Barker, who teaches government and is the director of the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies at American University. Josh, let me just start with you. Can you lay the groundwork, as it were, for what we have learned about Donald Trump's proclivity to just keep ripping things up? And what are the public equities that are involved here?
So what we've learned is that former President Trump's habit for ripping up documents was indiscriminate and repeated. Over the course of 4 years, various chiefs of staff, lawyers, and other advisors in the White House tried to warn the former president about the public records requirements that he had to keep these documents, but that he would rip them repeatedly, both in the Oval Office, in the dining room off the Oval Office, and in the residence. So what the White House had to do was to come and do a back system where the staff secretary and other offices would come through and go through the trash cans at night and tape them back together. So when the National Archives started processing so much of the material after the presidency ended, they found there were lots of documents that were ripped and taped back together. Some of those documents were provided to the January 6th committee that had still been taped back together. And they found many other documents, they said, that were not put back together. Some of them had been reassembled and some of them had not. And it's been a particularly arduous challenge for the National Archives dealing with the habits of someone who ripped so indiscriminately for so long.
One of the issues, Josh, that gave President Trump lift during his campaign against Hillary Clinton was that, you know, she was in a controversy that she had destroyed emails, had used a private email server, and that many that she had gone through and delivered some of those emails back. But there were literally tens of thousands, if not more, that she hadn't. Have we had any response from President Trump about that juxtaposition of his concern over Hillary's emails versus his proclivity to shred documents?
We have not. As you said, Steve, when he partially won the election over concerns about her handling of government records and her email. And what we've learned really in the past few weeks is that some of this was already known, to be clear. But what we've really seen come to light more than we even knew was that the former president did not follow public records rules and laws as appropriate. But he took, you know, 15 different boxes of things to Mar-a-Lago with him that the National Archives had to go down and retrieve. He shredded thousands of documents or ripped them up that they had to tape back together. And he's really, folks, you know, involved in the effort of the National Archives described this as unprecedented as far as the number of papers they've had to put back together and the amount of material they've had to try and retrieve from the former president. And they told us yesterday, Steve, that they still don't know if there's more material, that the former President Trump's aides in Florida say they continue to search. So really, who knows if we've seen the end of this yet or not?
Well, I have a feeling we haven't. But Anne Weissman, you have sued presidencies before. You successfully sued, as I understand it, the Trump transition team to prevent the destruction of documents, if I have that correct. But tell us what the law is, the Presidential Records Act, and what you have been trying to secure, not only during the Trump administration, but previous presidential administrations.
Yes. So the Presidential Records Act was passed to make it clear that the records of a president belong to the American public. They're our records, our history, not the personal records of a president. The act also makes it clear that the president has a legal obligation, while he or she is in office, to create and preserve records. The whole idea behind this statute is that this is a significant part of our history that needs to be created and preserved. Obviously, President Trump's actions are completely at odds with that statute. You know, the Post's reporting, which is quite incredible, has, you know, I think revealed just how systemic and ongoing it was. But we filed three separate lawsuits against President Trump early on in 2017. Shortly after taking office, it came out that aides were using encrypted, disappearing message apps to communicate, which meant no records were being created. It came out in 2018. President Trump's practice of ripping up his documents was first made public. And even then, it was so institutionalized that there were two people on staff whose job was to take back his records. We sued because President Trump refused to create records of key meetings with Vladimir Putin.
Five meetings with Vladimir Putin. We do not have records of.
Correct. And Kim Jong-un. He directed specifically that note-takers not be in those meetings. And we now know from the Washington Post reporting that at least some of the records that were destroyed included communications about his meetings with foreign leaders. And yes, at the end of the administration, we sued and we raised the concern. Look, President Trump is leaving office. There's a likelihood that he faces significant exposure legally. We fear that on his way out, he is going to, you know, destroy a lot of his records. And unfortunately, we didn't get very far in our lawsuit, actually. What the Justice Department that was defending the president said was, oh, not to worry. We've put what's called a litigation hold in place once you file the lawsuit. We've told everybody, don't destroy anything. Well, the Washington Post makes it clear that he continued to destroy.
This is what's fascinating to me. You've got literally an administration or a presidency is not just one individual.
Yes.
There are literally billions of documents that are part of any presidential administration that typically eventually go into the National Archives and into a presidential library for later research and access. I guess in this case, you've got one guy, President Donald Trump, ripping up stuff that's there, but there still will be billions of documents out there. But I think the other question is, what legal liability does he really face? I mean, I have yet to see President Trump, suffer any legal consequence of which I'm aware of serious, status, and haven't seen that happen. So, you know, is it a toothless law?
Well, the PRA is toothless. Yes, there's no enforcement mechanism in it. Courts have taken the view that Congress did not intend courts to have any role in supervising the president's compliance with the law. There are two criminal statutes that potentially apply. One of them prohibits what's called the degradation of a U.S. property. And the second statute, criminal also, says that it is against the law to willfully mutilate or destroy a record in a federal office. Mm. We think that there's a good argument that both of those statutes have been violated. And I also believe that the element of willfulness is likely met here as well. And again, due to the reporting of the Washington Post and people like Josh, we know that the president was told by two separate chiefs of staff and a White House counsel that his actions were illegal, and still he persisted.
Well, David, you know, I have tried to sort of think about not only Donald Trump, but other presidencies, and go back to Richard Nixon, who was a president I worked for during the last two years of his life, believe it or not. As director of the Nixon Center, you know, I think Kissinger and Nixon were obsessed that there be records and documentation of their presidency, which, when Watergate came along, proved to be something that perhaps they wish they hadn't done as much.
Yeah.
But when you look at every White House since, the attitude about taping or about records, how they've managed them, you can't really paint any president since Nixon as actually loving the Presidential Records Act, because things come back to bite them.
Of course.
You know, as a researcher and a historian, as a political scientist looking at this, what are the equities that you care about? What are the behaviors we should be securing from the person who holds the highest office in this land?
Well, Steve, you're right. You know, it started with Kennedy, and then that practice was continued by Johnson and then Nixon, and not necessarily, you know, for...
And that's the practice of taping.
The practice of taping specifically, right, which, as you noted, came back to bite... Nixon in rather famous ways. But, you know, they talk about how the goal at that time actually was to be able to use those tapes against political adversaries, right? I mean, the goals weren't necessarily all sanguine. But, you know, since that time, as you noted, that practice has been ended. But if you think about the richness that we've gotten from those tapes and from records in general, from Johnson especially, and Nixon, you know, as historians and as anybody who cares about the country and its history, and from learning from our past, right? We want to be able to see what these people did in office, the decisions that they made, the thoughts that were going through their minds, the conversations that they were having, so that we can learn, right? We can learn what they did, what worked, what didn't work, and why. You know, and that's the only way that we really get a sense of our nation's past, so that we can build a better future.
Josh, I'm wondering whether we should not just be looking at the torn papers, you know, in burn bags and in Donald Trump's wastebasket, but also asking questions about official secrecy and what we're not seeing.
Well, it's certainly true that this president had kind of a paranoid tendency to not want anything personal about him to come out, not any sort of secret that would be embarrassing towards him. He would often ask aides in meetings to not take notes. He would ask people if they were recording him at times. The former president was kind of a secretive figure in some ways. And what we saw in this case, Steve, was that we don't really know what all he took, frankly. We don't know what all he destroyed. I mean, one of the things that my colleagues and I are really trying to do is figure out, okay, so the National Archives says there's 15 boxes. What was in those 15 boxes? What else is still there? Mm-hmm. You know, there were thousands, if not tens of thousands, of papers that were ripped up. Was this a pattern of practice where he ripped up only sensitive materials that were, you know, he saw as deleterious to him in some way? Or was he just ripping things up because, you know, that's what he did? There are lots of questions that we still have to figure out here. I mean, we have kind of a broad outlines of what he was doing, but we still have lots of granular things that really will tell how nefarious these practices were.
Well, look, I want to jump to David in a second, but Josh, I know you're a reporter and you don't often give your views, but just reading your excellent reporting on this, I'm asking myself, you and I both know these folks, and normal people who run for the presidency sort of have the office in awe. They understand the public role. They see it. And I'm just wondering, who would rip up the records of their own thing? You know, do you have a sense that Donald Trump had awe of the office of the presidency, or saw it just sort of as, you know, a sideshow?
I think some of the trappings and the accoutrements of the office he saw that way, but I don't think he cared much about records retention. There was nothing that I saw in the course of 4 years of reporting on this president or since that led me to believe that he wanted to be a careful, keeper of his legacy. I mean, former aides that I've talked to have spoken to him about assembling a presidential library say he's very little interest in the topic and quickly moves on to other subjects. I don't think he saw keeping his papers, the details of his presidency in clean order as a high priority. I do not.
David, I know you wanted to jump in on that as well, but I mean, I asked you the same thing of someone who's studied different presidencies.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen the archive. I've gone to do research in the Clinton Library and the Nixon Library and the Reagan Library.
Yeah.
And what is the public lost? What have people like you lost when you see something like we've seen reported in The Washington Post?
Well, I mean, again, the ability to understand what happened for the past 4 years so that we can learn from it in the future. But one of the things that I really want to try to understand, perhaps from Anne even, is this distinction. You know, lots of times it's hard to prosecute someone if you can't, you know, demonstrate, you know, nefarious intent, right? And oftentimes we've seen that with Trump, where people say, like, oh, well, you know, he just doesn't know any better, or he, like, you know, is a narcissist and sort of thinks he's above these things, but it's not really that he's necessarily trying to conceal anything, and it was cathartic for him to rip up the pieces of paper and throw them on the floor, and so blah, blah, blah. But to me, more than the ripping and the shredding and even the taking.
I mean, I have to interrupt you. I do remember when he was giving a State of the Union address and Nancy Pelosi was sitting behind him and ripped up her copies of the State of the Union.
Yeah.
He did not look pleased with that.
Like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, even sort of more concerning maybe than the shredding and or the taking to Mar-a-Lago are these burn bags, right, which suggests that there was an actual, you know, practice in place, right? This wasn't.
Well, burn bags are typically done for classified information, right? So the mingling of classified and non-classified is I just wanted to clarify
that. No, that's
exactly
right.
So the burn bags are about classified information sent to the Pentagon. So the question was what made its way into those, right? This should have been part of the public.
And as I understand, right, it was what Trump wanted in there and didn't want to see the light of day, which seems to make a tougher case against him.
And, you know, I guess the question as you look forward and what ought to be some of the practices that we should expect from the administration? I must admit, I assume Josh is the same, I communicate with a lot of senior government White House officials, and I communicate with them both through their official email account and phone number and through their unofficial Gmail or AOL accounts. I even know someone who has a CompuServe account, believe it or not. But what are the rules? If I communicate with one of Joe Biden's most senior staff in a private account, is someone breaking the law there?
Well,
I know I'm not breaking the law, but...
Well, what the law says, it doesn't necessarily prohibit him from getting or receiving or sending from a private account. But that official is supposed to take those emails and put them into an official account.
Hmm.
The way the White House is set up, any email sent or received on an official White House email account is automatically preserved. It requires no action whatsoever on the part of any White House official. But yes, the problem is, you know, use of unofficial devices. And it goes on a lot. And we are trying to get the law tightened up on that. But the obligation is on the White House official who gets that email from you. If it pertains to official business, they're supposed to put it into an official record-keeping system. But, you know, again, when we're talking about this, you see how much give there is in the law. You see that, you know, with no enforcement, how easy it is to circumvent it. And now we know the president himself, who is the most significant person in the White House, whose records are of the highest value, was. And, you know, what I've been thinking about is, you know, you can go to the JFK Presidential Library or even at the archives, and they have doodles from President Kennedy that he created at the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis when our country was facing extinction, we thought. And they were preserved. And it's fascinating because they give you an insight. They're doodles. Yeah. They're not formal letters, formal memos. It shows you that almost everything a president creates.
Well, look, I think one of the interesting questions that's out there, not just about what the president is thinking, but about the different arguments that are going around him or her over policy and. Mm-hmm. You know, much of that, you know, is it becomes part of records and archives and then looking at the decision the president might have gone or inputs from foreign leaders, which may very well be part of the material that Josh Dossie was reporting on from Mar-a-Lago or other things that might be out there. And I guess, Josh, my, you know, question to you would be with regards to things that we don't know, have you begun to issue FOIA requests for material that might corroborate or might find information? Because, again, I know that any presidency is a great number of people communicating. So would those documents that Donald Trump be shredded be held in other parts of the government? And can you explain to our audience what a FOIA request is?
A FOIA request, a Freedom of Information request. We frequently use those, reporters, historians, and others use them as well, to try and get public records from the government. It's more difficult with the executive branch because there's so many protections there where they don't have to disclose certain things in the White House. But a lot of government agencies, a lot of other official places do not have those same protections. And one of the things that we've often tried to do journalistically is look for other places that would have to disclose, even if the West Wing proper does not. Some of the documents, Steve, it's hard to believe would be anywhere other than in the West Wing. I mean, we believe a lot of the things that he took were, you know, letters from world leaders, you know, documents that he viewed as sensitive. The New York Times reported last night that he actually took a piece of clothing. We don't really know exactly what that is. That he took the famous Sharpie map from Hurricane Dorian. But he took all sorts of things that were kind of personal to him. And one of those things that I'm not sure would be privy to any sort of other FOIA request. One of the other things that we've been trying to figure out is, in a lot of these documents, are there duplicates, right? Do aides have copies of these things? Do it other advisors? Do people who also would have provided them, would they exist in some other form, even if a former president himself did not provide them?
Well, thank you for that. Let me just ask you, in the last minute we have, 30 seconds each, David, can you just share with us whether you think that Trump has permanently changed the norms by which a president behaves and is expected to behave? Or do you think there'll be a bounce back to something like we used to see before?
Well, I worry that he has. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball to say for sure, but I mean, I think typically that's what you see historically. Every time a norm is degraded, it rarely bounces back, you know? And I think that Trump has ushered in an era where, you know, we see in general behavior by all kinds of politicians at various levels that we didn't used to see. A lot of copycatting.
And you know, I admire your expertise in suing administrations for the public good. But when I see unenforced subpoenas, when I see a lot of legal wrangling out there that doesn't have consequence, I guess my question to you would be the same. Are we now, because there has not yet been legal consequences applied for a change in presidential norms, going to see a permanent shift in those norms?
I fear we are. I'm hopeful. You know, post-Watergate, there were a lot of reforms that were enacted. They saw what loopholes the Nixon administration was able to exploit. There's certainly been an effort to do that now. I know I'm part of a group that's pushing for some reforms to the record-keeping laws. Mm. I wish I could be more optimistic, though, given the composition of Congress.
Bipartisan. Then.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I want to thank all of you. Journalist Josh Dossie, incredible reporting. Lawyer Ann Weissman and Professor David Barker, thank you so much for all for being with us today.
Thank you,
Steve.
Thank you for having me.
So what's the bottom line? President Richard Nixon was obsessive about record keeping, and he wanted notes and audio tapes of everything documenting his presidency. The Watergate scandal changed that, though, and pretty much every president since has had a kind of a complicated relationship with records and archives. But none has worked as hard as President Donald Trump to destroy records of his own presidency, whether he was being malicious or not. Presidents work for America's citizens. Their records belong to the people, and their time in office becomes the nation's history. Trump didn't buy into that idea fully, and he saw the job as serving him personally, which is why he, more than any other president we've seen, thinks nothing of personally ripping to shreds documents that tell the story of the Trump years. There's a law against doing what he did, but thus far, we haven't seen many consequences for those laws. If he can get away with it, other presidents down the line will think they can too. And that's the bottom line.